Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, my name's Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic wasteland, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1960s to today. Check us out at reallyawfulmovies.com, part of the Crypt TV family. Downtown Toronto headquarters, here is episode 61, 1963's Blood Feast. Dun, 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 dun. That's not us banging our head against the wall. That's the sound of the rather underwhelming, shall we say, soundtrack to this Herschel Gordon Lewis very minor classic.
Yes, well, in your estimation, it's a major classic.
Yeah, it was ahead of its time. We'll give it that. Yeah,
I mean, first of all, that, by the way, that amazing score you just heard was composed by Mr. H.G. Lewis himself.
Wow, he got a snare drum and just hit it. That
there
was
you go,
unbelievable.
Man.
Yeah.
Bum.
Ennio Morricone, eat your heart out.
There you go.
And there's lots of hearts having things done to them.
There's a lot of hearts being eaten and ripped out in this one. Yeah, no, this movie is infamous as being the first. I mean, some may argue that other movies came before, but this was the first real movie to depict gore.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say gore, I mean like real gore, like, you know, like the blood, the sinew, the innards, like everything. Now, H.G. Lewis, Herschel Gordon Lewis, is a man who I greatly admire. I mean, he's the godfather of gore. Without H.G. Lewis, I mean, this is, he started it all. He pioneered everything. You know, every time you see a throat slashed, you know, you see a forehead cleaved, you see a body eviscerated, you see anything.
You know, we owe the man our
you gotta pay homage to H.G. Lewis, okay? This guy, I mean, he's like Grandmaster Flash in the Furious Five, you know what I'm saying? Like, he started it all, okay? In 1963, A.T. Lewis, along with his producer David Friedman, started it all with Blood Feast. Now,
and it starts with a message, to get back to Grandmaster Flash.
Yeah.
And it starts out with a radio dispatch warning of another murder. A body has been mutilated. Panic. You know, oh, what to do?
Yes. And of course, there would be panic because here we are. This is Miami, right? Now, Miami is a good city, but I mean, it's not exactly the safest city in the world, right? Well, in this Miami, there's all of two cops on the force.
Yes.
Now, I gotta preface this by saying this is a bad movie.
Yeah.
But this is one of my absolute favorite bad movies.
It's not only is it incredibly cheap, I mean, it rivaled only by, we've discussed Cracker Jack in another podcast, an incredibly, incredibly austere, shall we say, film, but also some of the worst exposition you'll see in any movie.
Some of the worst acting, some of the worst editing, some of the worst everything. In fact, the acting is so bad, it's almost like it's a form of anti-acting.
You know meta-acting.
It's meta-acting. The funny thing is, I mean, one of the actors in this movie, the guy who plays the police inspector, Pete, His name is William Kerwin, right? But when he was in this movie, he was billed as Thomas Wood. Now, that's a very
fitting, as you would say,
for his acting.
Yeah,
I mean, the man could not be more worthy. Nor could other actors.
And he was one of the better ones, I gotta say.
He probably was, I mean, nobody can rival the great Mal Arnold, okay? Nay, Mal Arnold Epstein, who was all of 30 years old, okay, when he played the maybe 70-year-old Egyptian.
Yes, yeah.
Fuad Ramses.
Yeah, and we'll get to that. He plays a prominent part in this, and I think you mentioned it earlier. He looks like a sweaty Michael Richards from Seinfeld.
Casual-brow, bug-eyed Michael Richards. I mean, this guy, I mean, like I said before, he was all 30 years old, you know, and he played this Egyptian named Fuad Ramses, who owned Fuad Ramses Exotic Catering. Now, yeah.
And we'll get to that soon. And, you know, as we said, 1963.
This is rousedizing, so I love this movie so much.
This, again, predates the, obviously, feted, lauded, you know, accolades galore Psycho by 2 years. But this one starts with a bathroom scene.
Indeed. A
bathtub scene that is absolutely vile. Where there's a, you know, let's face it, a rather unconvincing cutaway death that is followed by what looks like a piece of prosciutto ripped out of this woman. And also, we gotta say, she's naked, and there's a little bit of a flash of a rather giant areola.
I didn't see that, but anyway.
You weren't looking hard enough?
Maybe not, but anyway.
Yeah, so 1963, we've got boobs, and we've got viscera.
And we got blood, yeah.
Yeah, and I believe her knee... she was basically carved up by...
Well, she was stabbed in the eye.
Yeah.
And her leg was hacked off by this devious Egyptian.
Yeah, a sinister killer. And who was dubbed in the movie, according to the Homicide Bureau, the worst yet. There's been 7 killings in 2 weeks. And so, yeah, as we said...
Bum, bum, bum.
And as you said, yeah, this couldn't be the most understaffed, you know, budget-constraining... police force ever, and this is the Miami-Dade County. They should have tons of... This is a major city, but they have all of 3 guys in the Homicide Bureau. And I mentioned it on the guy's desk. Like, we talked about mise-en-scene, and...
Oh, the mise-en-scene of this movie is absolutely
cheap.
Yeah.
This guy has a... And this is kind of inappropriate. This guy has an ashtray on his desk, and I asked you at one point, like, what is that? Is it looks like... A green dildo.
A giant green dildo.
Like the Hulk's schlong was on this guy's desk.
And it's funny, too, because then as Officer Pete and his partner were discussing these murders,
no sense of urgency at all.
None whatsoever, but I mean, there was no cleverness. It was not a double entendre.
No.
You know, he goes, oh, looks like this is going to be one of those long, hard ones.
Yeah.
And then you look at the ashtray, like, here you go, there's a long, hard one right there. But, anyway... To get the plot rolling.
Yeah, so, well, Fuad Ramses.
Fuad Ramses is a local proprietor. He's a businessman. He runs Fuad Ramses Exotic Catering.
Yeah, and then this seems like lots of non-perishable foods. And it doesn't seem overly exotic, like a bunch of tin cans behind the guy's counter. and he's, you know, he's called upon to cater a party by I forget the woman's name, but this is sort of
well-to-do.
Miami. She's got a pillbox hat.
Yep.
Yeah, Miami socialite in a pink dress, very Jackie O.
Yep.
And
it's a birthday party for her...
Young daughter,
Suzette.
Young, exactly.
This is played by... Suzette is played by Connie Mason, who's... I said it's got to be the ugliest Playboy Playmate I've ever seen in my life. I mean, she was a former Playboy Playmate, but I mean... With this horrendous overbite and skin like leather.
Skin like beef jerky.
Yeah, exactly.
Not that we're like Ryan Reynolds ourselves, glass houses, stones, but we're gonna cast them anyway.
We're not Ryan Reynolds, we're not Burt Reynolds, we're not Uncle Redenbacher, you know, we're just whatever. But hey, this is radio, it's not TV.
This is, yeah, exactly. Lucky for us. And so this Fuad Ramses, he caters to unusual affairs. So he's ready to handle this woman's party. And he's going to do so with a feast.
A blood feast.
Yes. And this feast has not been served for 5,000 years. And so this is going to be some sort of throwback to ancient Egyptian times, and obviously Fuad Ramses. Ramses was a famous pharaoh. This guy's name is Fuad Ramses. Yeah. Now, what's interesting in this business transaction between the two of them?
They might as well call him Omar Tutankhamun. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I would have thought, like, I've never run a catering business, but at no point is it discussed how many guests there are.
Nope.
Or he just says, okay, I can handle this, and I'll be ready in 2 weeks.
Yep,
it could be 4 guests, it could be 300.
Not only that, but I mean, this is a proprietor of a business, okay? He doesn't lock the door, he doesn't put one of those, like, you'll be back in 5 minutes signs. He just goes to the back of his shop, where he's got this, like, this shrine to this goddess,
Yeah, this goddess.
And he prays to you while he's, like, muttering this insufferable mumble jumbo to this gold spray-painted mannequin who's supposed to be, like, this, you know, effigy of the goddess Ishtar.
Is it Ishtar? Is it Itar? Is it Ita?
Well, I guess because of, what was it, the Dustin Hoffman flop of 1978? The musical Ishtar?
Well, yes, but...
Okay, yeah. Well, in this movie, it goes by various incarnations.
Depending on who's actually, mentioning the name, it's either Ishtar, Itar, Ita, Estonia.
This was not vetted by an Egyptologist. I can't even say it.
Although there is an Egyptologist in the movie, which is kind of hilarious.
Yeah, so, again, so this feast... Okay, you know, getting back to the feast here. She just seems thrilled with the idea. Now, if this was proposed to you, let's say, on your wedding day, like, oh, I'm going to have a 5,000-year-old feast, wouldn't you be concerned that maybe that at the time, in antiquity, they might have dined on scorpions or, like, I don't know, monkey brains or something? But no, oh, that sounds exotic. I'm just going to leave it in your hands, weird shopkeep.
You know, like a little taste of...
tasting menu of a
brain. A little preview of something. But yeah. Oh, it sounds wonderfully exotic. Let's go for it. You know, it's going to be super special. So... The blood feast is on.
Yeah, and as I said, this movie is all exposition, and some of the worst exposition ever. The quintessential exposition cliche in film is, of course, the newspaper headline. It's the laziest. It's been done. It's done. It's been done in Citizen Kane, right? Mm-hmm. It's been done in some classics, but it has a track record of at least 70 years of annoying people. This one has legs cut off. Police are hunting for a killer, and then that is flashed at the viewer. Headline, exposition, watch out.
Extra,
yeah.
So, I mean...
The body count rises.
The body count rises, in fact. I mean, you have these two young ones making out on the beach. And
she's trying to, you know, she's saying, oh, my mom's expecting me home. And, of course, the male half is trying to convince her otherwise to keep her... keep romancing her, and he has to look at least 40.
Like, well, it's funny because
this is supposed to be a Randy teen.
Mal Arnold, who plays the 60 to 70 year old Fuad Ramses, is all of 30, whereas this teen, who's supposed to be 18, is all of, like, you know, 45. You know, but I mean, and then you hear the bum 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 bum. And there's Fuad. Now, we got to say, the Fuad Ramses is lame. He walks a little limp, right? But he's able to overtake any foe. I mean,
For sure.
And he goes up to these young lovers, and he scalps a girl, and he removes her brain.
Yes.
And, I mean, you know, I got...
And this beach...
Mm-hmm.
Deserted, but not only that, this thing was filmed in Miami,
right?
And they never made it to the beach to film this beach scene. This is soundstage, beyond obvious soundstage, which makes you wonder. I mean, the whole thing, I don't know what the budget cost, but...
$25,000, I believe. Huh?
Yeah. Hey, well, I take that back, and they spent it fairly well.
And it made millions.
Wow.
Millions back. But anyway, I digress.
You've bought, like, dollar store squibs around Halloween that are, like, basically ketchup packets.
Yeah.
That's what this was. This beach scene, and the snake emerges, obviously, in a nod to Egyptian antiquity and the importance of, you know, of snakes and whatnot. So the snake appears.
The blood could not be more you know, vibrant, but it could not be more red paint. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? But all the same, I mean, you got to think, in 1963, I mean, this was shocking stuff. This was unheard of.
Yeah.
Nobody had ever seen this before. I mean, this was unbelievable. Another victim of Mr. Ramsey's is a young lady by the name of Trudy, one of the friends of Suzette's. And this man pulls out her tongue with his bare hands.
Yeah.
I mean, he may be lame. He may have a pronounced limp, but he's got this
incredible upper body strength.
Yeah, exactly.
And the skills of a surgeon as well.
And so, yeah, the body count, again, is rising. And poor Suzette, for whom this feast is being organized,
mm-hmm.
she says at one point, "These murders are taking the joy out of everything," as they would. It's all about you, eh?
And your feet. Right,
yeah, spoiler.
It's my party, and they'll die if I want
yeah,
to.
Yeah.
Now, but we got to say, one thing is, I guess, convenient or mm-hmm. lazy on the part of the screamer.
Yeah.
Suzette is dating Inspector Pete.
Yes.
Who's got to look at least 30 years her senior.
Yeah,
if not more. And they go to a class...
taught by an anthropologist, of course, because this is the horror genre.
Ancient Egyptian rites.
Yeah.
And they go to this class, and they hear all about the cult of Ishtar, or Ita.
Yes, Ita. In the ancient city of Antioch.
They hear
Ishtar the god. And this guy looked like Henry Kissinger, kind of. Except he didn't have that low voice, but yeah, he had this... And he explained, I would have to say, in excruciating detail, the vagaries and the intricacies of fucking ancient Egyptian religion.
He tells you
for a 60-minute movie, you learn everything you ever needed to know about Ishtar / Itar / retard /
And here's Inspector Pete, you know, who's totally stumped and clueless, and he's taking notes at this.
Yeah.
And this guy's explaining the blood feast.
Forget about every victim's had their heart ripped out.
And he's not,
and nothing is piecing together in his mind.
You can't clue in anything. You know? I mean, despite, it's like, basically, if Fuad Ramsey's walked by with a giant flashing neon sign saying, "I'm the killer," Pete would still be fucking stuck.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy is one of the worst inspectors I've ever seen. Never mind the forensics, but that's like something.
Oh,
else.
Yeah, yeah.
We were talking about that before, the lack of forensics.
Yes.
Well, I mean, look, there's so much ridiculousness in this movie, but...
Well, they also, as we said, foreshadowing and exposition and frequent nods. What's the name of that book? The Ancient Rites of
Ancient religions.
Ancient religion and cults. Yeah. And then one of the victims, this Janet, she's got, again, that squib / ketchup packet blood on her face. She's in the hospital being tended to because she's miraculously pulled through.
Yep.
But she is wearing mummy gauze.
Yep, yep.
And even that doesn't tip off any of the investigators. That's something
along
the Nile is being perpetrated.
Pete, Inspector Pete, one of two cops in Miami.
Yes, yeah.
Goes to a class on a weekly basis with his jailbait girlfriend, Suzette.
Yes.
And this is a class on
ancient Egyptology.
He learns everything
rites.
About the blood feast. There's all of one Middle Eastern gentleman, nay, Egyptian gentleman, living
entire city.
In the vicinity, who is known for having an exotic catering business, and yet nothing.
Nothing, yeah.
Nothing.
This guy would never have tracked down Dexter.
No, definitely not. So all of this is leading to the
bum, the incredible
feast.
The feast in question.
Yeah. So you know, I mean,
these pillbox hat society women all gather for Suzette's party.
Yeah.
And they're being charmed by this foreigner.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, is there some sort of subtext of xenophobia?
No. They totally accept this guy.
They accept this guy, and he's going to prepare their
feast.
And
I got to say the other thing about...
And he says, can I need some help in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Suzette, come with me.
Yeah, the guest of honor. The other thing about Mal Arnold, which I love, is that his Egyptian accent is more like Bela Lugosi than it is Mark Sharif. You know what I mean? Like, it's
may he rest in peace.
Right. It's like... I need the guest of honor to come with me. And basically what he wants to do is he wants to sacrifice her to Ishtar. Right?
Now, this guy is a very calculating, fairly controlled killer. He's been managed to abscond and avoid the law up until this point, but yet for some reason his MO changes to attempting to murder Suzette, right in her own home, in the kitchen, in front of a dozen witnesses at this party. How do you figure that? The god Ishtar has to be appeased. Yeah, he did. The god Ishtar has to be appeased.
Yeah, I guess. And so at this point, Pete finally puts, like, you know, two and two together and gets seven and figures out that that this is the killer and that he's now carrying the party of his girlfriend. At this very moment, he comes racing in. Now, this is one of the most hilarious ending scenes of any movie I've ever seen in my entire life, because you have this lame elderly man involved in a foot chase with able-bodied policemen.
Yeah, who, Suzette screams. He realizes that they're on to him. Jeez, go figure. He runs off into the street. The
cops are there. He shuffles off.
Yeah. Not off his mortal coil yet, but he shuffles off. The Miami's finest are chasing this lame septuagenarian.
Despite the fact that they're in vehicles, decide to get out of their car and try and apprehend him by foot.
By foot through the city dump, yeah.
I have seen, you know, I mean, even the O.J. Simpson Bronco chase was faster than this bloody thing. Because this guy is fucking, like, running away from these able-bodied cops. They have guns. They're not even discharging.
No.
And he's just like, oh my god, how are we going to track this guy down? Well, you know what? Ramses, he's gonna outsmart them all. Yeah. There's a dump truck. He gets in the back.
Yeah, not a good move.
Not a good move. Well, you were saying, like, is it routine for a dump truck as they're driving away to...
To crush its cargo mid-flight? Like, I've never seen a dump truck crush its...
cargo.
Yeah.
As it's moving.
There's just no way.
But they did.
They did, yeah.
And they basically, they crushed Fuad Ramses. So, the driver gets out. Yeah. You know, this
big meathead.
Big meathead wearing a white beard, tank top, and you know, he speaks to Inspector Pete. You know,
one of the detectives says, "Oh, you did the city a favor, son," by obviously, you know, crushing the killer.
Then they're like, "Well, let's go home."
Yeah, they get their cigarettes and they just leave. They don't tell what this poor public servant's supposed to do with the body.
He's got this crushed body in the back of his dump truck, you know. How's he going to explain that to the boss?
Yeah.
You know? And then, let's go home. You know, that's the end of that. You know, we don't have to do fuck filing paperwork and whatever. Let's go home.
Well, isn't the mob inextricably tied to the sanitation disposal business? Yeah. So maybe he's not the first body to end up in a dump truck.
Yeah, let's talk about the day for night continuity in this movie.
Yes, as we said, you know, Inspector Pete is quite the Lothario, and he is putting the moves on the leathery Suzette.
Yep.
And at one point, as we said, one of the beach scenes takes place in a soundstage, but the romancing scene takes place right on the actual beach, and this takes place over, I gotta say, 12 hours, because he starts romancing the woman at around dusk.
Then it's pitch black.
And then all of a sudden it's back to dusk again, and then she's saying all the while, oh, you know, aren't you supposed to be, you know, going out and catching the killer and not putting the, you know, putting the moves on me, basically. Shouldn't you be out doing something else? I gotta get home.
And Pete says something like, I think you'd be safer with the killer than you would with me at this point.
Yeah,
like,
he's a lady killer.
Oh,
sort
my
of.
Lord. Yeah, man, yeah. That was a little...
Not the lady killer, but one of a different stripe.
But once again, Chris, I mean, we gotta talk about the gore.
Yeah.
You know,
incredible. Like, as bad as this movie is, and it's by no... Make no mistake, this is a terrible fucking movie.
Well, but I mean, like,
the gore
this movie is
unbelievably cool.
It's
a progenitor of...
This movie is a veritable definition of amateurish in every single way, but you know what? It doesn't fucking matter.
No.
It's heart is in the right place, entertaining. H.G. Lewis, I mean, the gore is unbelievable. Even by today's standards.
I agree, yeah. Really, really well done, and and again, you can remark at the sort of the corniness of some of, let's say, the lyrics of, you know, Grandmaster Flash and DJ Cool Herc and all that kind of corny rap. But without that, you wouldn't have gotten into the stuff that we loved. And really, he really did set the tone.
In our previous podcast, we talked about Lucio Fulci and, you know, his use of gore, but there wouldn't be no Fulci if not for H.G. Lewis. Now, Herschel Gordon Lewis, I mean, Blood Feast, which is probably his most famous movie. He's done so many other great ones. He's done 2000 Maniacs. He's done Call Me Blood Red. He's done The Gruesome Twosome, The Gore Girls, The Wizard of Gore, and on and on and on. They're all amateurishly incredible. I love... he's one of my absolute favorites. And I just have to say, I mean, this movie, if you want to, like, watch a bad movie, you'll enjoy Blood Feast.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, if you want to watch a really good movie, you'll enjoy Blood Feast.
For sure.
And if you look at it from a historical perspective, I mean, this is a movie, like, I mean, think about it, in 1963...
Yeah, it's a couple years before Repulsion,
this is way
Psycho,
before Peckinpah, all that kind of,
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
Imagine, like, sitting with a grill on the drive and watching this movie, you know?
Incredible,
But seeing these, you know, these scalpings and these disembowelings and these beheadings.
Yeah, name one other film from 1963 that you could not show to a 14-year-old today.
Exactly.
It's unbelievable.
Now, what year was Song of the South put out?
I'm not sure.
That racist Disney movie that they... that's one that they can't show today, basically.
Well, yeah, for different reasons. Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, I mean, this I love Blood Feast. I mean, like I said before, as a gore hound, I'm a gore hound. You know, we talked about gore in a previous podcast. You don't need it in a horror film. You know, you can have a great horror film without it, but damn well, you know what? It's like great seasoning. If it's used well, it really makes a movie that much more palatable.
Or a fine dessert to cleanse the palate. Yeah. Just fantastic.
Again, we have to pay homage to Herschel Gordon Lewis. Mm-hmm. This man, he's still with us. You know, he's in his 80s, and again, like we have to appreciate what this man brought to the world of cinema. What did you learn from Blood Feast, Chris? Besides learning tons about Egyptian culture.
Yeah, I learned more than I ever wanted to do too about Ishtar,
or Itar.
Yeah,
or Ita.
Yes,
or Oprah.
And I learned that this is really a police procedural B movie. That's been in many ways done to death, but not in the way, in the inimitable fashion with which these victims were dispensed. Mm-hmm. And it really, the ripple effect of this can be seen in everything from, hey, I would argue, Law and Order to Criminal Minds. And really, this was way ahead of its time. There's nothing on TV like this at the time. Mm-hmm. There's nothing in film like this. It's disgusting. And
you know, it's funny because Lewis has a very famous quote. I mean, he knows that this movie is amateurish. He knows that it's kind of crap.
Yeah, he says lots of out of focus moments, lots of weird zooms that make no sense.
But he says he likens it to a Walt Whitman poem. He says, "It may be garbage, but it's the first."
Ouch.
Walt Whitman are not, you know?
One of the great men of American letters.
Yeah, there you go. But anyway, you know, I can be facetious and say what I've learned, but I mean, you know, I'm such a fan of this movie and of this man.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to interview Herschel Gordon Lewis. If I had that opportunity, I would be absolutely...
Well, let's definitely get on it. And, you know, if you're fans of his, we hope you're fans of ours, too.
Right, star rating. Give me a star rating, man.
3.5 for me.
Yeah,
for its place in the pantheon, for sure, in the canon.
Yep. Objectively, yeah. I mean, if I was going to rate this on, competency acting and
then it's
scene,
a 2, obviously.
Then it's like a 2, but I mean, honestly, for like, you know, what this movie has done,
mm-hmm.
the influence and the ripple effect, as you said before, even people that don't even know that they're influenced by H.G. Lewis are influenced by H.G. Lewis, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is a 4-star movie.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. It's crap, but I love
it. Yeah, yeah.
And for that, I'm giving it 4 stars. So,
yeah, check us out, www.reallyawfulmovies.com, and we'll talk to you soon.
Bum.